You're saying not only is type 1 diabetes not something you're born with, it's something we create through our unhealthy living, but you're saying that even though it's harder, it's still possible for somebody in type 1 diabetes to be completely cured and to be off the diabetes medicine, the insulin and so on, if they follow the guidelines, and there is a possibility this can happen. You've seen it.
Oh yes, I have seen it very, very clearly.
This is the Raw Life Health Show. Raw Life.
Hello, everybody. It's Paul Neeson with the Raw Life Health Show, and we have one of our favorite guests, Andrew Moritz, and he is going to be back talking about, you know, he speaks about so many topics of healing, but today one of the things he's going to talk about is something that's so common and more people are contacting me about because it's such a diet-related issue, and that is diabetes. So, Andreas, for those of that people that haven't heard you, or even those that had, can you give yourself an introduction and give out your website, and then we'll talk about this topic.
Okay, I'm Andreas Moritz, and I'm 58 years old. I grew up in Germany in your post-war time, and I was going through a lot of different ailments, including rheumatoid arthritis and arrhythmia and severe anemia, major lymphatic congestion, and gastrointestinal distress. A lot of liver problems, which ended up as gallstone attacks. I had 40 of those. Frequent fainting that I never knew where I was going to pass out, such as in churches or at post offices or banks waiting in line. So it was a tough childhood, which taught me basically everything I know about the human physiology, the human body, how things work. I was very, very interested in figuring out how to tackle my issues from the root causes up, not the other way around, looking at the symptoms only and trying to just alleviate these symptoms, but really look at the root causes, eliminate the root causes, and then recover from the various ailments that I suffered from. And this helped me greatly in my work because I was really only interested all my life in the last 40 years of doing this, looking at what causes the various problems that people have. And my interest was just focused on that, never really on the symptoms themselves, which didn't fascinate me at all.
Well, you cover so many different topics, and I recommend everyone get your books. But tell us about this thing, diabetes. There's type 1 and there's type 2, and from my understanding, type 2 is 100% diet related, and type 1 definitely can be affected by diet. Can you clarify that and just talk about your research, because you have a wonderful book on the topic, and so many people continue to suffer from this. So I want to talk about exactly your research about it and what you recommend people that have been told they have that, and also how people can avoid that.
Right. The type 1 diabetes obviously is a lot more rare, and it can start when you're very young. And what I found is that children who have heavy doses of vaccines, and it's more prevalent in North America than in other countries like in Iceland or Finland or Denmark, Norway. Because there's a lot of vaccinating going on here, so the children get bombarded with chemicals that overload the liver and the brain and nervous system and the pancreas. So once the liver is affected, the pancreas gets affected too. And so many things can happen, unpredictable things, because vaccines have really never been tested for safety, and there are no long-term studies or comparative studies available because the CDC says for ethical reasons such studies should not be conducted using children that are not vaccinated as a placebo group. So the problem is that we don't really know how these chemicals affect us. Recently, a study came out that showed that the average child that is born in this country has 287 chemicals in the body. Some of them are carcinogenic. Now, the pancreas cannot really defend itself against these chemicals that the liver has not removed from the bloodstream. There's a direct connection between the pancreas and the liver. So the pancreas offloads its metabolic waste products and other toxins directly into the liver. If the liver bile ducts are clogged up, then that stuff is going to accumulate in the pancreas, and it can create suffocation of pancreatic cells, particularly those that are responsible for producing insulin. And the other issue is directly related to stones that pass from the liver or gallbladder into the common bile duct and end up pushing up into the pancreatic duct as they travel through the common bile duct up reverse going into the pancreatic duct. And once that happens, there are particular enzymes, there are pancreatic enzymes that are supposed to digest your food. When these pancreatic enzymes are not activated by combining with bile, which normally happens when there is no congestion either in the liver or common bile duct, then these pancreatic enzymes remain unactivated, and when they stay in that form and they are trapped, they haven't been released from the pancreas, then they start attacking, literally attacking the pancreatic cells and destroy them, and that changes the insulin producing capacity of the pancreas. And so that's where you find that type 1 diabetes you're being a major cause from. So I often tell people look at anything that can cause congestion in your liver bile ducts. That's where my book The Amazing Liver and Gallbladder Flush comes very handy, because it gives you the way to decongest the liver and make sure that the common bile duct and the pancreatic duct are not congested so that this kind of illness cannot arise. So prevention in this case is primary. That's the most important thing, because once you have type 1 diabetes, it is a lot more difficult to correct it. Even though I have many times mentioned that I have seen people who had type 1 diabetes and don't have it anymore, but it takes a lot of patience and a good amount of cleansing of the liver and also changed diet and lifestyle. So one really has to be very, very careful in resurrecting basically the pancreatic functions that are related to insulin production. With type 2 diabetes, now there's one factor which I didn't mention, and there are some studies to show that type 1 diabetes can actually be caused by milk, cow's milk. I would suspect that pasteurized cow's milk is more indicated in causing the type 1 diabetes than whole cow's milk that hasn't been altered in any way. Once you alter cow's milk, it becomes very, very destructive in that it can create allergies. And once there is a severe allergic reaction, it can then end up creating an autoimmune response similar to what I mentioned before, where particular enzymes in the pancreas start destroying its own cells. And so it is now clearly shown that cow's milk, and they didn't specify in the studies whether it was whole milk or whether it was pasteurized milk, But I would be, in any case, just to be on the safe side, avoid cow's milk. Particularly in the Western Hemisphere, many people are allergic to the particulates in the milk and the particular proteins in the milk, and also to sugars, lactates. And so I would be very, very cautious recommending children to drink cow's milk. That is something I've always recommended not to do. Also, there are studies to show it can easily cause, the milk sugar can easily lead to type 2 diabetes when it's ingested during childhood. These are some things to remember for every parent to make sure that you don't develop that. Now, with type 2 diabetes...
Now, before we get to type 2 diabetes, I just want to clarify this because people always tell me, and I was told, that type 1 diabetes is something you're born with. It's not something you get, as opposed to type 2 is something you get later on. And you're saying not only is type 1 diabetes not something you're born with, it's something we create through our unhealthy living, but you're saying that even though it's harder, it's still possible for somebody in type 1 diabetes to be completely cured and to be off the diabetes medicine, the insulin and so on, if they follow the guidelines, and there is a possibility this can happen. You've seen it.
Oh, yes, I have seen it very, very clearly. And most people believe that, well, you're born with it, that means it must be genetic. So it's a genetic disease, but that's not true. Many children are born, they after 2 or 3 years, they have type 1 diabetes. Their parents had no type 1 diabetes. There are no gene factors that are responsible for creating that. And even if they were, it is now becoming more and more clear that genetic factors are only playing a very, very tiny or minor, if any, role in contributing or creating these particular illnesses. There are only 1% of all diseases are genetic diseases, and you are born with them. It's not that you have a genetic disease that you don't have for the first 2 or 3 years, and then suddenly you have that genetic disease. That doesn't make any sense, because your genes don't work that way. Either you have a faulty gene, you have missing chromosomes or whatever, or you don't. You can't just make it up after a couple of years of living here. Now, the other factors that the environment changes gene behavior far more than genes change the production of proteins and the other substances that the body needs in order to function properly. So genes are controlled by their immediate environment. If there is severe congestion in the environment and the lymph drainage is inadequate, and the liver is unable to detoxify the blood properly, and the body accumulates toxins, then that changes the gene behavior. It can even lead to genetic mutations, which then can show up as genetic disease, but it's not the genes then that caused that particular illness. It's the illness that causes the gene changes.
Now, from a diet standpoint, we know there are many other factors besides diet that affect our health. But from a diet standpoint, do you think there's one diet that's best for everyone to avoid running into these problems with type 1 or type 2 diabetes? Or do you think it's based on the individual and based on many different circumstances?
Basically, every person is different from another. So we can never completely 100% say this particular food or substance is good or bad for everyone, unless, of course, it's a known poison or toxin. There are certain foods on the planet that are solely made for animals and not for humans, so not everything that can be eaten should be eaten by human beings. But there are some basic body types. In fact, there are about 10, and some three basic ones. According to Ayurvedic medicine, Ayurveda, which is the oldest form of medicine on the planet, dating back at least 6,000 years of written records. So when there are certain body types that are particularly hypermetabolic, that means they metabolize any ingested food much, much faster than the hypometabolic type that has the name kapha body type. The hypermetabolic, the over-metabolic person, is the Vata type, Vata. And when you give them light foods, foods that are too easily digested, like very light in weight as well and low fat content, then they become out of balance. They become even more hyper. You need to give them heavier foods, whereas the heavier set kapha body type with the low metabolic rate needs to eat foods that are more light and that are more dry, rather than moist and fatty. There's a different body type, the pitta body type. You can recognize these people by their red hair. When they have red hair, blue eyes, fair skin, reddish skin, they go out in the sun, they burn very easily, and they may have freckles, a lot of blemishes on their skin. And so these are the fiery body types. And if you give them foods that are heating, then they become extremely hot inside and very uncomfortable. And they can develop severe stomach problems, such as stomach ulcers. So again, it depends on each body type, and each one requires a different food or nourishment. And it's good to learn about these kind of things.
Now let's talk about type 2 diabetes, but it's different than type 1 because unlike type 1 that can be affected by health things or is much more common is type 2 that's easily caused by overeating and eating the wrong foods and so directly they're both created by things we're doing or things that are affecting us, but what is the difference? Why do so many more people suffer from type 2 than type 1 if you're saying they're both a connection to how we're living?
Well, with type 2 diabetes, basically what's happening is that the body becomes insulin resistant. That means the body is rejecting insulin on the cellular level. And we have to ask, why is the body doing such a thing? Why are the body cells closing their doors or their gates, their openings, their doorways to insulin? Insulin is required in order to transport glucose, which is the energy provider and for the cells, to your t and when the insulin is rejected, then obviously the sugar, the glucose is not getting into the cells, and the cells can die slowly and they deteriorate, and that's why you can develop things like blindness, where the eye cells are undernourished, the brain cells don't get enough nourishment, the legs, the lower legs particularly, which are the least circulated parts of the body because they are the farthest away from the heart, they may start falling off, literally, because there is no more. Not enough glucose and nutrients reaching those parts of the body. So it's a very serious illness, and it's a leading cause of death now. Much of it is related, or most of it, or almost it is related to insulin resistance. So when the body is resisting the uptake of insulin and therefore the uptake of glucose, we have to trace it back to the blood and ask, why. What's happening in the blood? And so there are several factors that lead to the insulin resistance, and one of them, which is rarely ever discussed and has been only recently recognized by the scientific community, I've been preaching about that for 25 years, that high protein consumption is one of the leading causes of diabetes. And usually people have been shaking their heads and say, this guy is crazy. It's sugar that does that, because the sugar will drive the blood sugar up, and protein doesn't, right? So the issue is with that is that protein has, if you eat too much animal protein in particular, the body has an insulin response, because once you have eaten the protein and you have broken it down into a lot of amino acids, the body has to synthesize these amino acids, and in order to do so, it requires an enormous amount of insulin. So the insulin that is required to digest, for example, a piece of steak is at least 10 times more than when you drink a can of Coke with 10 or 12 teaspoons of sugar in it. So you are basically abusing the pancreas's insulin reserves. So the body constantly has to produce so much insulin. And when you produce too much insulin, and it circles around the bloodstream, circulates in the bloodstream, the insulin will try to put the sugar from the blood that is in the blood into the cells. And if there's so much insulin reaching and touching the surface of the cells will say, hey, we can't afford that, because insulin is a carcinogen when you produce too much of it. So it creates cancers. And so insulin is a leading cause of cancer if you make too much of it. And in some of my books, I write that heart disease, cancer, and diabetes are actually sharing the same causes, the same root causes. They're just different expressions. And if you look back 40 years, 50, 40 years from today, going into the past, into history, these diseases were grouped together as one. So cancer, heart disease, and diabetes were actually not considered separate illnesses. And so it's very interesting that with the specialization in modern medicine, we started getting specialists for each of the three instead of recognizing that they share the same root causes. And so overconsumption of protein, which has increased over the last 100 years by at least 600%, that took its toll in terms of over-secreting pancreatic insulin, which then took too much sugar off the bloodstream. Sugar level drops, you start craving sugar, so you start eating also more sugar, not just the protein, but also the sugar. So this creates a mess. Eventually, the body will try to convert some of the extra sugar that now is rejected by the cells, because the cells will be resistant to insulin. So the sugar stays in the bloodstream, which is a very dangerous thing in type 2 diabetes. So that can cause many, many illnesses. So in order for the body to deal with it, it will convert the extra sugar into fat. And so we find that many diabetics are obese. So the obesity wave that we are seeing now is actually a protective mechanism in these individuals, that the extra fat that is building up, it's a temporary survival mechanism that allows the person to survive the lurking destruction of entire organs and systems in the body, at least for the time being. In the long term, however, the fat accumulation has a suffocating effect. But it's important to understand the mechanisms. I've not seen many diabetics among people who eat very low amounts of animal proteins. And this was confirmed by brand new studies and some older studies. Like 2 years ago, there was a study on 550,000 Americans and had found that animal protein consumption increased the risk of dying from all causes of disease, cancer, diabetes, and heart disease, and osteoporosis by 20%. And this was confirmed by more recent studies as well. So now it's more recognized that diabetes can actually is caused primarily by overeating animal proteins.
And so when you're saying it comes by a lot of people that eat animals, do you see less diabetes in people that are vegetarians, including people that eat a lot of sugar, vegetarians that eat a lot of sugar? Do you automatically see a big fall when, people are excluding animal meats? And is it animal meats alone, or is it all animal products?
It's mostly concentrated animal proteins that are the culprit here. And obviously, sugar is a contributing factor. When you go back to a time when sugar was less processed, and people were getting their sugar from fruits and vegetables or grain foods, which contain carbohydrates, but these are complex carbohydrates. So the body was given the opportunity to convert these complex sugars into simple sugars, glucose. The liver is in charge of doing that. But if you don't give the body a choice in doing that and simply ingest simplified sugars that will go right from the stomach, through the stomach, into the bloodstream, sometimes within minutes, then that it's like giving a sugar injection right into the bloodstream, and that will raise the sugar levels. So you stimulate the insulin secretion from the pancreas. If you do that too much, it will also have the same insulin-resisting effect as proteins have in the long term. With the proteins, you don't see the sugar level going up right away. But it will do that in the long term because it's a metabolic syndrome, and that's why diabetes is now called metabolic syndrome. It's not really the sugar up and down effect. Yeah, so both are definitely involved in this, and often it's a combination of them. When a person eats a big protein meal, and have a big dessert at the end that has a lot of refined sugar in it, then that's like the typical standard American diet that is responsible for the diabetes epidemic that we're experiencing now. And it's close getting to heart disease and cancer levels in this country, millions and millions of people. And now children, there's a new wave of type 2 diabetes in children, and the obesity level goes with it. So it's all connected.
So, what kind of diet do you recommend for everyone, for children, adults? Should they be eating the same way? And what kind of diet would you recommend to just help avoid disease, particularly diabetes? And then tell us for people that have it, what you would recommend them. Is it the same diet, or do you recommend them do something different?
Well, from my experience in the last 40 years of having worked in many places in the world and seen basically every kind of illness and the responses that I've received by changing people's diet and lifestyle, cleansing particularly the liver, kidneys, and colon. I've found that virtually almost every illness, including diabetes, is reversible. And you can go on the internet and you'll find that there are so many people who have had similar experiences. And the scientific research that is coming out more and more is confirming that a high protein diet is not what we thought it's a good idea. So generalizing, I would recommend to cut back to the protein consumption to what it used to be 100 years ago, which was minimal really. I spent 15 years in the Mediterranean, and I have not seen many diabetics in that country, in Cyprus, and in the rural areas of Greece. And the people there, they eat a high-fat diet, by the way, a lot of olive oil and avocados and other foods that are rich in fats, yet they are not fat. You don't find the farmers there having an ounce of fat on their body. They are very thin, but extremely strong. And so their muscles are not bulky like here. They are thin, but they are extremely strong. They pull weeds when they're 90 years old, and they're still in their gardens and tending their fruit trees and doing all that work. And they have happy faces and glowing eyes. And so I would recommend such a diet. And when you ask them what they eat, whether they eat meat, and they say, well, maybe for Christmas and maybe for Easter. And the rest of the time they eat vegetables, lots of vegetables, fruits, grain foods, nuts, seeds, oils, fats. They're always keen getting enough salt, which is extremely important for the human body and for animals. Without the salt, it's impossible to survive. But it's real salt. It's not the refined sodium chloride that is just added as table salt, to most people's diets.
So let's be clear here. You're not recommending, you're not saying people have to completely avoid meat and animal products to be healthy. What you're saying is they do way too much of it, and if they did a very small amount, if they decided to do so, or none at all, they'd be much better off. But you're not necessarily saying they have to completely give it up.
No, they don't have to do what I've done. I've not eaten or touched any animal protein for 40 years. I don't eat protein foods. My body doesn't need to eat protein in order to make protein. It's a myth. Otherwise, I should be dead at 58.
Now, are you a big fan of people that aren't eating protein, to take protein supplements like protein powders and things like this from a vegetable source, maybe, or not necessarily?
I've seen too many problems arising from that. They feel better for a little while, and then I've seen so many cases of intestinal tumors developing, and sometimes I had like one woman, she had a tumor that was as large as an orange growing in her intestine, and it caused an obstruction. And so the doctors were recommending surgery, and I said, hey, wait a minute, give me 10 days. You have had this for a while. And so I told the person to stop using the protein shakes that she had every day for the last 2 years. And within 2 weeks, the entire tumor had shrunk to nothing. So I'm very, very cautious giving recommendations of substituting your protein shakes or your protein fillers almost. They are very, very concentrated, hard for the body to make use of them. They can plaster the intestinal wall, cause major obstruction. There's no fiber in the protein, so it slows down the peristalsis. It can cause constipation. Once there's constipation, there's backwashing of waste and toxins into the rest of the body. It's almost like you close one door and everything that comes from behind cannot get out of the door anymore, and it floods the body with waste matter.
Now, are you talking about all protein powders? Because there are some like whole food protein powders like that raw food company they're selling that supposedly come from different sources than like going to GNC and getting one of their animal-based proteins.
Still, it's highly concentrated, and so I don't understand how the body could make use of something when it is designed to digest something that is naturally available in the vegetable kingdom. So when you look at broccoli, which has a lot of protein in it, but it has other ingredients in it that allow that particular food to be digested properly, and it's not in such high concentrated amounts where the body doesn't really know what to do with that. It's like a flood of protein that cannot be broken down because there's simply not enough digestive secretion available to deal with it, particularly if the liver bile ducts have never opened up properly or they are clogged up with intrahepatic gallstones. Then you need a lot of bile to digest your protein. In order to digest protein, you have to have fat. You cannot digest protein without fat. And in order to digest a lot of protein, you have to add a lot of fat. When the bile ducts are clogged up, you cannot digest the fat, and therefore you cannot digest the protein.
So even like in, so are you for any supplements at all for the average person? I'm not talking about people that might have severe deficiencies or something, but for the average raw diet or healthy diet, do you recommend supplements or no?
I personally don't. I'm not telling anyone what to do or not to do, but what I've seen is that supplements are harder to digest, particularly if they have like 10, 20, 30, sometimes they have like 50 different ingredients in them. The human digestive system is not programmed or designed to digest more than 5 ingredients at a time. And so if things are becoming so complex that it's virtually impossible for making use of it, so most of it becomes excreted, and so you're wasting your money.
So what would you recommend in terms of, are you closest to something called a natural hygiene diet? It sounds like that's what you're recommending, of eating as close to nature as possible as we would in nature.
I would certainly say that because there are our genes, our genetic makeup is programmed to have an interaction with what is in our environment, and that's why we have such great difficulties digesting genetically modified foods, and that's why you see so many illnesses and new illnesses showing up that have never existed on this planet before. So I definitely recommend to go back to the basics and to learn to grow, if possible, your own vegetables again, or go to a farmer's market and know where your food is coming from, that it is not altered genetically or otherwise, or filled with pesticides, because once the pesticides are in the food, the most basic ingredient and important ingredient like sulfur is missing. Sometimes there are a couple of supplements I do recommend if there's a depletion of the soil and of the foods of sulfur, and that would be organic sulfur crystals. There's some more information on my website energy.com. That's ENER-CHI.com. And that organic sulfur is something that is in the body and that we need. That's a basic ingredient. That's a basic part of every particle of our body, basically. And if that is reduced because the food is no longer organic or organically grown, then there is no sulfur in that food, and therefore our body becomes depleted of it. And when that's missing, the body can no longer detoxify itself, and the skin can no longer grow properly, and the hair doesn't grow properly, the nails don't grow. And you can see from these changes externally, skin, nails, eyes, when the eyes no longer shine, when there is no luster to them, you can trace that back to there's sulfur missing in the body.
Tell us more about your book that you wrote on with diabetes. It's on your website, and it's not a big book at all. And it's a book I would definitely recommend anyone suffering or know someone suffering from diabetes get. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, it's actually, and I've written that, I mentioned that on the website. It's an excerpt taken from my comprehensive book, which is 550 pages, Timeless Secrets of Health and Rejuvenation. It's one of the chapters. So it does go with the rest of the book. However, I was frequently asked to just take an excerpt and publish that separately, and I did that. And the book is very small, but it contains condensed information how to reverse particularly type 2 diabetes in a natural way, simply by changing one's dietary and lifestyle habits. Many people don't realize there are simple things like vitamin D deficiency, which can contribute to type 2 diabetes. And when people get exposed to regular sunlight and sunshine and really sunbathing, type 2 diabetes can either completely disappear simply because of doing that, or greatly improve. And there are studies that actually prove that. And I've written a book on the subject, Heal Yourself with Sunlight. And then there's there are other things like sleep. Now the scientific research confirms my suspicions that I had for at least 30 years that type 2 diabetes is also closely linked to not getting enough sleep, early night sleep, the 2 hours before midnight being the most important time of the night to sleep. And now there are studies to show that once you change your hormones, and particularly melatonin, which becomes deranged when you go to bed, let's say at midnight instead of at 10 o'clock in the evening. And once your melatonin is out of balance, the serotonin is out of balance. And the serotonin is an extremely powerful brain hormone that regulates many, many functions, including basic metabolism. So many metabolic disorders are actually caused by serotonin imbalances and melatonin imbalances. And so research has been shown now that when you sleep, when you go to bed at early hours and you get enough sleep, your metabolism kicks in. You have a much better normal metabolism. So when you are going to bed every night later, or and you sleep less hours, and you are not getting the full night's rest, you actually put on weight. You're changing stomach hormones. You're deranging your entire hormonal system. The cortisol levels you increase, which causes suppression of the immune system. So you can get like different illnesses, infections, and all sorts of chronic disorders arising from that.
It's very interesting you say that. I wrote a book called The Daylight Diet that talks about the harmful effects of eating when it's light outside versus when it's dark outside. But you've shown there's a connection between diabetes and not getting to sleep on time, and I assume eating late at night as well, because the food doesn't digest as much, correct?
Yes, correct. The digestive system is actually controlled by the hormone serotonin, and most people don't know about that. Serotonin is not just a brain hormone, it is a digestive hormone. In fact, 85% of all the serotonin the body makes is produced in the digestive system to regulate digestive secretions. So when you eat your biggest meal of the day at lunchtime, at noontime, when the serotonin levels are at the peak levels, when you produce the most serotonin, because serotonin is light sensitive. So the more light there is, sunlight there is, the more serotonin you make. And as the sun is descending, going down, and by the evening, serotonin is only about 10-15% in the digestive system than it is at lunchtime. So if you eat a heavy meal in the evening, and the later you eat, the worse it is, the less serotonin you make. So you will not digest your evening meal, particularly a heavy meal, if you eat it at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. So the later you eat, the worse it gets. And so all that food is going to stay undigested in the gastrointestinal tract, and it will start rotting. It will decay. It will putrefy, ferment, and produce toxins as the bacteria that decompose that food will produce very, very powerful toxins. If those foods include protein meals, then you basically produce nitrosamines, which are carcinogens, and that's where the cancer meat connection comes in.
Wow, this is just such great information, and I want everyone to look at your books and get to your website. So give us your website again, Andreas.
It's energy.com, ENER-CHI.com, energy.com.
Thank you so much for joining us again on your busy schedule. And I know there's a lot of people watching that have diabetes or know somebody who does. Is there anything you'd like to say to them right now, directly, just to give them some hope, knowing, because the doctors are telling them there's no cure, but you know there is. So what would you like to tell these people that just seem like there's no hope?
Well, once you start interfering with the symptoms of diabetes, you interfere with the healing mechanism of diabetes. So it's very, very hard once you try to, so you manipulate the sugar level, the blood sugar level, and lots of drugs, and they're extremely toxic. They have tremendous side effects that affect the liver, that can destroy your liver. And the more you destroy your liver, the less your pancreas is able to recover from that. So I would recommend you do your homework. Don't immediately look for squashing symptoms, but look at the root causes. And try that out before you allow anyone to manipulate the symptoms, because you will find that within 6 to 8 weeks you can you get rid of diabetes type 2. I've seen that happening over and over. So it's not something that you're born with or you are stuck with for the rest of your life.
Great. Andreas, thank you again so much, man.
You're welcome.
All right. So,
a wonderful day.
Brighten up your life.